Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, you look kind of pale. Are you feeling okay?
I'm doing okay, Patrick, but I'm still a little shaken up over this dream I had last night.
Oh, wow. What was it?
I dreamt that Bob Dylan never went electric. It was so real.
Yikes. That sounds terrifying.
It was. I woke up in a cold sweat just as I was about to go on stage with my Peter, Paul, and Mary cover band.
That's so stupid.
I don't know.
I don't
either. Okay, Patrick, we were just discussing off air a little bit about how, you know, the weather isn't really cooperating with us that well yet, but I imagine by the time people hear this, it'll be getting better. And the reason I bring this up is it feels like the world is kind of opening up a bit.
Yeah.
And yep. Things are starting to feel a little bit more like they used to back over a year ago. And the reason I bring that up is because for the past year plus, we've been doing these little song circle things on Zoom, the Friday Night Hootenanny, we called it, just as a way to sort of like, you know, maintain some connections with people and share music and so on. And that's sort of winding down now as well. So we thought that would be a good time here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
We thought that would be a good time to invite to the podcast a guy we got to know through the Friday Night Hootenannies, and he's just a tremendous songwriter, and he can explain sort of how he got involved in that with us. But we felt that maybe he deserved a bigger audience than just the 30 people or so who show up every Friday, right? And
absolutely, Jim. And you know, at various points, I mean, I think when the Hootenanny started off, there was about five people, right? It was me and you and a couple others, and it just slowly began to grow. But there were moments when people would join and play, and you're like, holy crap, what is going on here? Like, this is like really, really good. And when Jay joined that, you know, that first time and kept coming back, it was one of those moments where I was like, this thing is really growing into something beyond just a way to, you know, stay connected and pass the time on Friday nights. So, you know, Jay, thanks for taking a minute. And without a doubt, I you know, want to do everything I can to spread the word about your work. You've got a rich, deep catalog out there.
So,
go ahead.
So, Jim, let's introduce to the world here.
Oh, yeah. Before I start asking questions. Yeah.
Jay Schnitt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for coming on. Okay. Now, back to you, Patrick.
Thank you. And this is the part where we put it all together. But, you know, I've been listening to your stuff, Jay, since you came on with us. And I mean, I wonder how you got started. Were you always like, you know, a little kid with, you know, you started off in like school band, or, you know, did your parents play, or what's your kind of origin story that led you to picking up a guitar?
I played trumpet in high school, and, you know, I've always loved music. There's a lot of musicians in my family, but I didn't start playing guitar until I was about 18, like right after I graduated high school. And then I just immediately started writing, you know. That's kind of how I learned to play the guitar and, you know, some other instruments, was just through writing.
Were you a writer of other things, you know, stories or poems or any
You know, I wrote it. Yeah, I wrote a ton in high school, you know, really, really terrible high school poetry, you know, that I was the kid that walked around with the notebook, you know.
Right. Me too.
And, you know, not very popular, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, folks, and I know we'll be working some samples of Jay's music in here, but, right, Jim, this is one thing that immediately sticks out when we heard him play was the literacy, you know, the wordplay that went along with his music.
I think that's key here, and I find this interesting. And Jay is up in central New York, right? Where? Utica?
Right.
Yep, Utica.
Utica, mm-hmm. And that's where you grew up and have always lived there?
Yeah.
Okay. And no, I find this interesting because I think a lot of people, when they get into music, they generally want to learn how to play songs by other people, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a different mindset or a different kind of person who comes at it with just immediately like, how do I start writing songs? So,
yeah.
So have you thought about that at all, Jay? Like, what was it about your interest, I guess, that made you immediately want to turn to songwriting, or what was it about songwriting, I guess, that appealed to you right away?
I mean, I guess for me, it was just a natural, you know, progression, and I knew I had things I wanted to say, and that seemed like the best venue for it, and my most comfortable. You know, I'm not a, you know, I'm a pretty awkward guy, a pretty, you know, quiet dude, you know, socially, you know, not the best in social situations. So, you know, for me, I feel, you know, most comfortable, you know, with a guitar, singing songs, you know, on a stage or on a record or something. I feel very at home doing that. And it's kind of the, you know, it's the best venue for me to talk to people, I guess, and to talk to myself as well.
Well, yeah, I think there's that, right? It helps you kind of sort of work through some of your own thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like therapy in a way, right?
For sure. I never, very rarely approach a song, you know, with something specific in mind. I might have a vague idea, but usually that idea gets blown out of the water pretty quickly once, you know, you start working on the song, and it, that kind of journey and that adventure, in the writing process, is a huge thing for me and a huge draw for me. And I think what is most fascinating about songwriting to me, and just the revelations that you come at, you come to, and, you know, those surprising moments, you know, when a line comes and it leads to another line that you would have never, you know, never come to otherwise. So that kind of revelatory journey, is hugely important to me.
I know this is probably a really difficult question to answer. I think songwriters often have trouble singling out, you know, their work. But if somebody approaches you and says, you know, hey, somebody, you know, told me I should listen to your stuff, what song would you start them with?
Oh, geez. I don't know. You know, my songs, you know, they, you know, it runs the gamut. I guess it would depend on the day you asked me, and also, like, you know, what's most recent on my mind, you know, at the time. So I'm just finished recording another album. It'll be out pretty soon. So any song off of that record is probably what I would point them to, as soon as it's available.
Yeah.
For what is available, I would, you know, I don't know. The single song thing is hard. You know, I like to point to albums.
Okay.
You know, I think A Crooked Line of Birds is my, I think that's my strongest sounding album. I really like the songs on there. And sonically, I think it's the most polished I've ever been. And there's also the whole political, you know, records, which I've found a little niche in.
Yeah.
So songs like, you know, Dylan Went Electric, Talking Blues, you know, that's been a pretty popular song.
Yeah.
Way back in the summer of 65, Bob Dylan got bored and maybe a little tired of picking and strumming on stage all alone. He put a band together, just wanted to play a little rock and roll. He still wanted to say stuff, he just wanted to say it a little louder. There was when the end got started. The fans started booing, they didn't like it louder. The whole wide world started to lose their minds. Even Pete Seeger picked up an axe and tried to put an end to the whole goddamn thing. You know, we would have been better off if he had. Cause Dylan went electric in 1965, and the world went insane. Now we're all gonna die. Now we're in the state we're in, wanna know the reason why. It's cause Dylan went electric in 1965. Now stay with me. The band didn't stop, took the show on tour. They kept getting louder, used more and more electricity to drive their amps to get where they were going. They used all of the gas, well most of it, some enough to put us over the edge. You know oil don't grow on trees, man. That's why there's war in the Middle East.
I love that song. How did that song come to be?
That was me and my buddy Palmer were up here in my studio right after when Trump got elected. It was like the day after or something, and we were just drinking whiskey, trying to come to terms with what the hell just happened.
Yeah.
And we were talking about some of that stuff, and then, I don't know, you know, we started talking about some other stuff. We started talking about girls a little bit, and, you know, half the bottle of whiskey's gone. And then, you know, we were talking about trying to determine, like, okay, what brought us to this point as a nation, you know, where this is happening? You know, was there one specific event? What was the butterfly that flapped its wings? You know, obviously, it's not just one thing. But, you know, a little later on in the night, my buddy turned to me and he was like, man, I bet you it's all Dylan's fault. Because we had also been talking about Dylan at the Newport Folk Festival earlier that night as well. And I don't know, for some reason that just stuck with me. So the next day, I wrote the whole thing the next day, pretty much blaming Dylan for everything.
If Dylan had stayed in the pure side of things, this is where it all goes back to, right, folks? Nothing bad would have happened. And it's interesting, Jay, too, you describe yourself as a folk musician, and obviously political songs have been entwined with folk music for a long time, right? How much time have you spent learning about that, you know, movement, whether it's from the Weavers, Woody Guthrie on, you know, all through more modern stuff like Dylan? I mean, is that something you've invested yourself in?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I love all that stuff, and that's kind of my... you know, it's something I always go back to. And, you know, of course, like, you know, Woody is one of my heroes. I can kind of consider him, you know, my musical grandfather of sorts. You know what I mean? And of course, Dylan, you know.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know if there's any musician alive that's not influenced by him. But,
yep.
Yeah, you know, and even going back to the turn of the century and all those, I love, you know, all those old folk songs. And it really tells the story of America. And it's... Yeah. I'm a huge history fan, so it's kind of a, you know, it's a history lesson in and of itself, going through all those wonderful songs.
Yeah, I mean, I knew very little about that stuff until I think it was in the 90s at some point. The Smithsonian reissued Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music with all those kind of songs that you're talking about right there, right? You know, the old ones that were passed along, and some they don't know where they came from, and, you know, all these recordings from different places. But it does really tell the story of how people really lived in America. And I don't know, I get that same kind of earthy sense from your music.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. And also, you know, how some of those songs, you know, progress over the years and change.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's kind of this, you know, almost a game of telephone. You know,
yeah.
Where these songs get passed on and they change to suit, you know, kind of to tell their own stories.
Right.
And I just love that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've always been so fascinated when I learned about A.P. Carter sort of collecting these European folk songs or whatever they were, right? And he was savvy enough to put his name on a lot of them. But in truth, they've been around for, you know, who knows how many years, right? Sung by people, you know, from all over the world. And I think it's that really fascinating too, how that all changes and morphs.
So along those lines, Jay, do you think that you are trying to capture a moment in time when you're writing songs? I mean, is that your goal there? Something that speaks to today?
Sometimes, you know, of course you want a song to last and have, you know, have legs. When I'm doing my more political stuff, I think most certainly it's, you know, it's geared towards, you know, what, you know, current events. And sometimes the hope is, you know, that a song will, you know, hopefully be irrelevant in, you know, a number of years, in a weird way, you know, when you're speaking of, you know, things that are, you know, terribly wrong in this country. Unfortunately, you know, that usually doesn't happen. But I think from a lot of my other stuff, though, there's never really a goal involved. It's kind of just to tell this, let the song tell you what it needs to be, and being open to having that conversation with the song. And whatever that's telling you, you know, if you try to force it in a direction it doesn't want to go, usually doesn't turn out too well.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me. And I know, you know, one vibe I always get from Jay when he's on the Hootenanny is he's sort of you know, he's up at the plate and he's got his guitar on and he's like, well, I don't know. Let me see. And it's almost like you're catching a vibe from what's going on inside you and what's been happening in the Hootenanny. Mm-hmm. And then you whip out this amazing kind of a tune. So I can definitely see, and, you know, the way you sort of described that, the writing process where it's not plotted and graphed, you know, before you're going in there mm-hmm. and trying to do it, totally makes a lot of sense. I love that about you. And I guess I got to ask, why in the hell aren't you a big superstar? I don't understand.
I wish I knew the answer to that.
I don't get it.
I wish I knew. I mean, I'm not the most, internet savvy promotion type of guy. You know, if I could, I'd just, I'd spend all my time up here in the studio writing. I would love to write for other people, you know. I mean, take my songs. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Just as mm-hmm. long as people hear them. I take a lot of pride in what I do, and I don't think it's, I'm not trying to like blow myself up, but like, yeah, I'm proud of
yep.
the songs I've written, and I stand behind them.
Absolutely. And of course, Jim, after being on this international podcast,
well, yeah, this is it.
Star will certainly.
This is the moment. Mark it down. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's tell people, though, that, I mean, you can find a lot of Jay's music on the streaming services and
yep.
Especially on Bandcamp as well, but also places like Spotify and so on. There's
right.
At least, looks like half a dozen or more, looks like seven, I think, albums on Spotify of stuff
That's
that you've
right.
been recording over the last, 10 years or so, right? So,
mm-hmm.
It's out there. People, go out and listen to it, find it. I think you're going to really enjoy it. And what about performing live? Do you get to do much of that? And what is that experience like? Because again, it's like, it feels like the kinds of songs that you do really require the listener to pay some attention to what you're saying. And I wonder if it becomes sort of increasingly difficult in today's world.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily hard. Especially, I'm an original musician in kind of a cover band land, and I'm not, mm-hmm. not really known enough to do a lot of, ticketed sit down shows and stuff like that. Which I have done, and I've had a lot of success, like opening for bigger names and stuff like that. But, for the most part, I'm playing in a corner in a bar, you might get, one guy clapping here and there. And it's extraordinarily tough, and it's, especially to book when, you're doing it all yourself as well. And when you don't really like talking to people, it's hard to, you right. feel like you're bothering them, like, hey, can I come play your place? I just got a response today from somebody actually too, like, oh dude, I think you're the most talented musician we've ever had here, but we're really gearing towards cover bands right now. Hmm. And you're just like, well, what am I supposed to do with that? Thanks.
Right.
I got to eat though, like,
yeah,
folk musicians right. need to eat too. And,
there you go. And I wonder too, Jay, if you could, since we're mentioning the Bandcamp and Spotify and things, could you shed a little light on what folks will see, for example, when they go to the Bandcamp? I'm looking at it right now, and you see a couple projects here by Jay Schnitt and the Colluders. What exactly is that?
The Colluders is kind of the band I put together for that album. A bunch of guys that I've been playing with for years, and we've done various projects over the years. We had a band called the Reuben James for a number of years, and then the mm-hmm. Archipelagos. Playing around. So I kind of got those, I don't know. I normally record everything myself when I'm recording an album and just play all the instruments. But, I love those guys and I love playing with them so much. I just thought this was going to be a great kind of project for us to do together. So I brought those guys the songs.
My friend, when did it begin to look like civil war? Wake up in the morning.
We're working on another one right now, not as the Colluders, because was specifically for that album. But so I don't know. I'll call ourselves something else. I haven't come up with it yet. But yeah, we just started working on another one together. So I'm psyched about that.
Very cool.
Okay, so this leads me to this question I had for you, Jay, which is this. I noticed on your bio on your website, says along with Jay Schnitt's solo career, he also plays upright bass with the Americana band Auld Lang Syne, as well as guitar and keys with psychedelic garage rockers The Real Burnouts. He has led the acclaimed prog rock band Archipelagos, as well as legendary Central New York alt country band The Reuben James. So that leads me to believe that you're more than just a folk singer. I've read like three different other genres, right? So,
yeah, I think primarily I consider myself, you know, that's kind of my bread and butter. But I grew up listening to my dad's prog rock albums, King Crimson, ELP, you know, all that. I love that stuff. And then, you know, even my solo stuff, like the album like Stay Younger is definitely not a folk album. You know, that leads more towards kind of radio heady, you know, kind of alternative vibe. That's one of my favorite albums I've actually made. I think it's really interesting. But yeah, you know, any type of, you know, I don't think there's, I don't know. I want to do it all. And I like doing it all, and any opportunity I have to play any sort of music, I'm going to jump on it. Like the band Auld Lang Syne, they're now in the Southwest, so I don't play with them anymore, but they needed an upright bass player for a little tour they were going on. And I had never played upright before. And Tim in the band was like, well, we're going on tour in 2 weeks. You got 2 weeks to learn. And they got me an upright bass, so I just learned all the songs and went on tour with them. It was awesome. So now I can call myself an upright bass player, I suppose. But I want to do it all.
That's so cool. That doesn't sound like the easiest instrument to just sort of learn how to play.
I was going to say, like, how in the world do you learn how to play that?
I mean, I'm not going to say I played it fantastic, but I was able to at least hit the bass notes that I needed.
How has the past year affected your songwriting, would you say, Jay? Do you feel like it's changed it in any way, or were you always the kind of songwriter who was reacting to whatever was happening anyway? So this was just another event, you know, be it a little more radical than anybody had really been through before.
Right. I don't know if I've always, you know, when I first started writing, you know, I wasn't as kind of reactionary to current events. You know, that took a while to get into, but, you know, I'd already been, you know, I'd been doing that for a number of years before, you know, the pandemic hit. So when it did hit, I was kind of, I had that kind of ammo in my back pocket where I was able to, respond to it, productively, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, too, I think, for a musician like yourself who loves to spend time right closer to way in the studio doing your own thing, you know, probably it wasn't as, I don't know, was it as severe a jolt do you think that other bands experienced? Or I don't know, maybe that's a bad question. I guess it's hard to compare those two things, really, kind of apples and oranges.
I don't know. I mean, I know, you know, a lot of friends in bands and stuff who had a really tough time because you couldn't get the band together, you know.
Right.
Or, you know, with me, it's just me. So, you know, it was easy to hang out with myself, you know, in the studio. I didn't have to wear a mask, you know. So, you know, that aspect of it was certainly easier, but it was definitely hard on all of us, and especially, you know.
Yeah.
Not being out there playing and gigging, you know, 2019 was one of my most successful years, and it felt like I was really kind of gaining some steam. And then, you know, just the rug, you know, got ripped out from under all of us.
Yeah.
But, you know, the break was also, you know, aside from the tragedy of the entire situation, It was almost healthy for me personally to be forced into that kind of break and kind of a chance to reset and re-examine all aspects of my life, you know, not just musical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I'm really intrigued by not only anticipating, you know, the first time I get to go back to be in the audience at a show, but, you know, I think it's going to be so interesting when some of these musicians get back on stage, right, and start performing. How is that going to feel different, and how is it going to look? I mean, I think it's going to be a really interesting time, right? Have you done playing outside of, you know, kind of your general area? I mean, have you ever gone to like L.A. or New York or Boston or any of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I've played, you know, throughout the Northeast quite a bit. I've never gone out west, but yeah, you know, you know, the whole of New York State. You know, I've gone down to Boston a number of times. The city, playing in the city is kind of a pain in the ass. I don't really do that much anymore. But yeah, you know, kind of, you know, in the East Coast, kind of, you know, down into even, you know, Asheville and places like that.
Very cool.
And some small tours, you know, but yeah, it's not easy. But you keep trudging along, I suppose.
Yeah, yep. Keep it going, man. You have great stuff, and I really do want people to hear it. So, you know, at the very least, you can reach people more easily now with things like, you know, Bandcamp and other streaming service, stuff like that. I mean, the downside to that is sort of like, well, everybody's doing that too. So, it's, you know, it's, but at least the potential's there that people can more easily access it.
Yeah. And that, you know, that was kind of another, you know, through the shutdown and everything, something I discovered was the, you know, I kind of wrote a few standalone songs and made videos for them, and they got really good responses. That's something I've never really done before, and kind of, you know, did a nice produced kind of edited video.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, so there's, I had about 3 or 4, maybe even 5 of them. I don't know. And then I collected all those songs and put them on a record, the quarantine, whatever the heck it was called.
Yeah, so it's the last a compass of stars.
That's right.
Quarantine singles.
He set sail at dawn beyond the horizons, strip off the worlds that we wore. We weathered the storm.
Going to ask about how that came together. Was that just sort of like that was something very specific to you during this period of time, you know, something you needed to do?
Yeah, they were all kind of these kind of standalone singles, I suppose, that I put out over the shutdown. You know, normally if I'm approaching a record, you know, there's you want to try to have a cohesive feel to the whole thing, which I don't think this one does, because like I said, they're all kind of these separate ideas, but I thought it was important to collect them all into a single place as kind of a time capsule type of thing. Every song on that album I did a video for.
Oh, cool. So where can people see those?
YouTube, on my Facebook music page, Jay Schmidt Music, and giving me a like on that page helps guys like me quite a bit.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Just little stuff like that really goes a long way.
And have you put out physical stuff, Jay? Like, I mean, you know, had records pressed, whether they're singles or EPs or albums?
Yeah, all the albums up on, you know, like Bandcamp are available on CD as well.
Okay, great, great.
And hopefully I'll be putting something out on vinyl sometime in the future, if I can ever afford it. This new one, I'm thinking about trying to do that. I think it'll, the sound of it seems suited to vinyl to me for some reason. So,
okay.
But, that's something to think about as it's closer to being finalized.
Totally. And if we know of any labels interested in putting out a specific song of yours, for example, we'll definitely get in touch.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks very much for coming on here.
Yeah. And thank you.
We really have enjoyed listening to you play and hearing your different songs. And like Patrick said, it's, you know, we've both been listening to your stuff on the streaming services, and I'm happy to know now that you have CDs available. So I'm going to check that out as well. So, all right. Anything else, Patrick?
No, I was going to say, I know that, you know, Jay has said he doesn't feel particularly comfortable talking about himself. And I think, I can't remember where this quote came from, but there's some musician, I think, in an interview is like, hey, man, I got into singing songs so I wouldn't have to talk to people. I don't like talking to people. Now you're asking me all these damn questions. You're asking me to explain myself.
Right. So, of course.
It's got to be hard. And we appreciate it, Jay. And I totally understand. You know, where you're coming from, and we appreciate, you know, all your honesty and just everything you added to this community. So, again, folks, without sounding ridiculous, you really got to check this guy's music out. You really do. I know there's a lot of listeners we have that, you know, for whatever reason, don't make the hoots, but, this has been one of the big treasures.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely worth your time. Okay.
Thank you so much.
And then, of course, you can go to jayschnitt.bandcamp.com.
Mm-hmm.
The music there. Or, like I said, you know, just search him on whatever streaming service you may also use. And then you mentioned you're on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And any place else people can find you?
My website is just jayschnitt.com. Just the letter J. And then Schnitt.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Important. Yep. J dot. You're J Schnitt. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks very much. And best of luck. And let this be the start of something big. All right.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Okay.
Oh, thanks, Jay, man.
All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. And I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been Jay Schnitt. And we'll talk to you all later.
Almost forever, and if the future comes, will you remember us? Clouds were a dinosaur in the moon. And as it waltzed across and devoured up the sky, city lights were only stars hanging in the night, and one by one they flickered out and died. And
why in the hell aren't you a big superstar? I don't understand.